the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. With some surprise, I saw a Blockbuster article that caught my attention in New York Magazine. I begin the article I published today at albertmohler.com with the note that if you really want to understand what's going on in terms of the intellectual, entertainment, cultural, media elites in New York City and Manhattan, all you have to do is look at four periodicals: New York Magazine, The New York Times, The New York Review of Books, and The New Yorker. You look at those four sites, you look at those four periodicals, you got a pretty good idea of what's au courant, what's very much on the minds of the trendsetters in liberal Manhattan. It's interesting to look at because those folks have an inordinate influence on what happens to the rest of the country in terms of media, entertainment, academia, politics, pretty much you name it. That's why when you see something like what my eyes fell upon today, you know that something's really big going on here. The article is entitled "The Abortion Distortion, Just How Pro-Choice Is America, Really." The article is by Jennifer Senior, a writer for New York Magazine, who was prompted to write this article by the Stupak Amendment. You may remember that Representative Bert Stupak had introduced the amendment having to do with eliminating abortion from the House of Representatives' version of the health care reform bill. It passed by a majority. The amendment was then a part of the legislative history where it stands right now. One of the things we're going to be talking about later today, by the way, is a similar effort in the Senate. But the passage of that act, which is being described by many people as the most significant restriction of abortion rights since Roe v. Wade, 1973. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's being said by many. The fact that it was adopted by a House of Representatives dominated by Democrats, with a good deal of Democratic support, has led the pro-choice folks in places like Manhattan to scratch their heads and wonder what in the world happened. Well, Jennifer Senior comes along to say, well, here's what happened. The numbers aren't with us. She really does a very good job. I do not know who Jennifer Senior is other than the fact that she's the author of this essay, but I'll tell you this. She's an honest and very insightful writer. She comes to ask the question, is America really as pro-choice as many pro-choice people had felt that it was? She says the numbers just don't add up. We'll be taking a closer look at this in just a matter of minutes. We're going to open the phones for conversation about this. You're going to hear some of the most amazing statements about abortion that are contained within this article. You're also going to hear some of the most amazingly hopeful things about abortion you may ever have heard in terms of Americans having an unsettled conscience that is, as the writer here says, very ambivalent kind of feelings about abortion as many people had not expected. You know, the Supreme Court didn't expect this. They expected that when they handed down Roe v. Wade in 1973, the American people would say, well, okay, the Supreme Court has spoken on abortion. That's the end of it. It wasn't the end of it, thanks be to God. And it isn't getting close to being the end of it. And this article tells us that at least in terms of public opinion, things are increasingly going our way. There are also some of the most troubling things you could ever hear in this article. Some of the thinking that goes into the advocacy for abortion, some of the desperation that goes into the entire equation. We're going to be talking about it today. It ought to be one of those good discussions where we understand that worldview matters. Let me just give you a hint. One of the pollsters working for NARAL made the statement, and this is one of those things that should catch your attention just immediately. Harrison Hickman, a former NARAL pollster, said this about why those who are opposed to abortion have so much energy and commitment. He said, if you believe that choosing the wrong side of the issue means spending eternal life in Hades, of course, you're going to be more focused on it, end quote. Well, we'll look at that statement a little more closely, but does belief in God matter? Does belief in a God who judges us matter? You bet it matters. Even a pollster for NARAL recognizes that. We're going to get to that discussion in just a moment. We want to invite you, first of all, to join us by calling 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're glad to hear from you by social media. You can follow up to receive my regular updates through the day, including commentary on what's going on in the news and in the culture and in the church. You'll find that just by going to twitter.com/ to sign up to follow Albert Mohler. No space, just Albert Mohler. Also there at Twitter, there's Mohler Radio, also one word. And at Facebook, the Albert Mohler Program. And we've got some new forms of social interaction with that page at Facebook, the Albert Mueller Program, and we're looking forward to adding a whole lot in coming days. You can also email us. Just email us at mail@albertmueller.com. I'd like to know what you think about this. Worldview really does matter. Convictions really do matter. Whether you believe in a God, and specifically the God of the Bible, who is creator, redeemer, and judge, it really does matter. You want to see the evidence? Well, we'll talk about this article. You can go right now to my website at albertmueller.com. You can find my article entitled An Amazing Article on Abortion in New York Magazine. And then you can follow the links directly to New York Magazine and read it for yourself. Folks, I'm holding in my hands another report, and one of the most amazing things of my life is receiving so much information. I feel like sometimes I'm in the middle of a whirlwind, and I just want to look at every bit of it and try to figure it out, take it apart, and try to figure out how Christians ought to think about this. Every once in a while, they come from unexpected sources. I have in my hands this report. It was originated at the RAND Corporation. Those of you who are familiar with the history of the Cold War know that the RAND Corporation was one of the great think tanks of the American technological and scientific world. But a project that began there is now being released by publication in the journal Pediatrics, the official journal of the American Academy of Pediatrics. It has one of those very scientifically organized titles. It's written dispassionately in kind of academic speak. Here's the title of the article, Timing of Parent and Child Communication About Sexuality Relative to Children's Sexual Behaviors. It's by a list of experts and doctors. It's published in the December 7, 2009 edition of Pediatrics. Folks, it's a blockbuster. We're going to be talking about it on this program. As a matter of fact, I think I'll just go ahead and give you a heads up. I think this is going to be a fantastic Friday discussion for us on this program. It is a study of sex education and what parents do and do not do, when they do it, what impact it has. And here is the bottom line. Here's the headline from the New York Times. For instance, about this, it's Time Magazine, Parents Have Sex Talk with Kids Too Little, Too Late. And the too late part is what really is provided in terms of the research here in this journal article from Pediatrics, the official journal of the American Academy of Pediatrics. It turns out that when parents finally get around to talking about sexuality with their kids, the average parent is waiting just way too long. And I regret to tell you that's true. I regret to tell you that we live in a society in which it is often that parents wait too late, because we often as parents think about our own developmental stages, what we had to deal with at certain stages of life. And let me just give you a little wake-up call here, parents. You know this. You know it cognitively. You really do know it. Your eyes are open. You're breathing the oxygen. You know what's going on. But when it comes to your kids, you just kind of hope not. You hope they're not having to think about, know about, you know, hear about, deal with these things. But this particular report says parents are just waiting too late. Also, another very interesting angle on this is provided just with U.S. News and World Report analyzing the same data. Here's the headline by Nancy Shute at U.S. News and World Report. The headline is, quote, boys miss out on sex education talk with parents, end quote. Well, that leads to a very interesting aspect of this. It turns out that parents, those very same parents that are saying too little, too late, are saying very little at all, if ever at all, to boys. You know, as a parent of both a boy and a girl, and one who tries to pay close attention to parenting trends and the realities of what's going on with boys and girls and young men and young women in this society, I can understand why parents have some reticence there, maybe some increased reticence. It's because parents probably feel a good deal more protective immediately of girls than of boys. I want to tell you, that is a huge mistake. That is a category error. That is a parental malpractice. It may be understandable because of cultural prejudice and the kinds of traditional concerns that parents have had, but let me tell you, from a Christian worldview perspective, protecting the moral integrity of your sons is as important as protecting the moral integrity of your daughters. Leading young men and young women to know their different kinds of responsibility related to sexuality, that's very important. Training young boys to be young men, training young girls to be young women, those are two different things, but they are not disproportionately important. They are equally important. The difference is in how they are instructed, trained, encouraged, disciplined, molded, mentored into maturity. But the need for the process, it's equal for both genders. We'll be talking about this on Friday. I'll be writing about it as well. It's really fascinating stuff, as you find it in the literature. You never know. Every once in a while, you find something that just has to be talked about in the most unexpected place. Interestingly enough, we talk about magazine articles in New York Magazine with some frequency on this program, because it turns out that that magazine, which is such a barometer of Manhattan culture, is also very, very confrontational in terms of going at Manhattanites about the things that perhaps they don't want to know. Jennifer Senior here, writing to a very pro-choice culture, living where she's sure most of the people reading the magazine are advocates of abortion. She says, there's a wake-up call here, folks. America is not as pro-choice as you think it is. The reasons why, the contours of all this, are fascinating, important, and absolutely mandatory for our discussion. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Coast to coast and with listeners around the world, you're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. The issue of abortion is not over in this culture, not by a long shot. The controversy over abortion is in many ways hotter now than it was back in 1973. That's something many younger Americans really do not recognize. You go back to 1973. And when the U.S. Supreme Court handed down the decision Roe v. Wade, a lot of folks thought, well, that's just going to end the discussion. The court obviously believed that, as was made clear in statements by justices in that majority opinion, 5-4 majority, by the way. It was also clear that many in the liberal elites in this country thought that that would simply settle the issue, but it has not settled the issue. The passage of the amendment restricting abortion in the current health care proposal by the House of Representatives. It was initiated in the House by Representative Bart Stupak. His so-called Stupak Amendment has shocked a lot of the pro-choice folks, not only in Congress, but far beyond. They're scratching their heads, wondering what in the world happened. And if you're in Manhattan, the kind of folks that read the New York Magazine, the New Yorker, New York Review of Books, the New York Times, you're going to assume, just because we all are creatures of our own context, you're going to assume that lots and lots of folks are pro-choice and pro-abortion, and that only a small minority is pro-life. And then something like this happens, and it really upsets the whole worldview. And now comes along Jennifer Senior to write this article, an amazing article in New York Magazine about abortion. And I put out a statement with my article this afternoon saying I think it may be the most important article on abortion in recent history. It's quite a statement. I recognize it, but I think it is. Let me just read to you out of it. Dealing with the fact that the Stupak Amendment passed, Jennifer Senior asked the most awkward question for her readers there in Manhattan. She says, is America really pro-choice? She says this, quote, according to a Gallup poll from July, 60% of Americans think abortion should be either illegal or legal only in a few circumstances. Only 17 states pay for the procedure for poor women beyond the standards of the 1977 Hyde Amendment, meaning if the woman's life is in danger or she's been the victim of rape or incest. Just 2 months before the health care bill's passage in the House, a Rasmussen poll found that 48% of the public didn't want abortion covered in any government-subsidized health plan, while just 13 did. 32% believed in a neutral approach, though what on earth that means is hard to say, end quote. So along comes Jennifer Senior, writing in New York Magazine to say, hey, fellow New Yorkers, America is not as pro-choice as you think it is. She goes all the way back to 1973. She cites Professor Jeffrey Rosen of George Washington University by saying that the Roe v. Wade decision itself in 1973, quote, was one of the few Supreme Court decisions that was out of step with mainstream public opinion, end quote. She suggests, that is Jennifer Senior, that America is, quote, a very ambivalent pro-choice nation, end quote. She acknowledges the numerical data that indicates an increasing pro-choice direction for the American people. And speaking to a pro-choice readership, she laments, quote, it sometimes gets lost how truly numerically challenged we are. She asked the question, how did the Stupak Amendment pass? She answers it this way. The idea that a bunch of pro-life rogue wingnuts have hijacked the agenda and thwarted the national will is a convenient but fanciful belief. I mean, folks, did you hear what she just wrote? I mean, that sentence is in New York Magazine. Let me read it to you again. Quote, the idea that a bunch of pro-life rogue wingnuts have hijacked the agenda and thwarted the national will is a convenient but fanciful belief. She goes on to say, even with an 81-person margin in the House, and even with a passionately committed female pro-choice speaker, it was the Democrats who managed to pass a bill that arguably would restrict access to abortion more aggressively than any state measure or legal case since the Supreme Court decided Roe v. Wade, end quote. Now, in all the millions of words I've read on abortion, I'm confident of that, in the last 3 decades or so, I don't think I've ever seen anything quite that straightforward and candid. Along the way in her article, Jennifer Senior makes some fascinating observations. I mentioned one of them before we began this discussion formally. Harrison Hickman, a former pollster for NARAL, that's used to be known as the National Abortion Rights Action League, now it's just known as NARAL. He was quoted as saying, and I love this, just listen. Here's a pollster trying to explain why the pro-choice movement is gaining. The pro-life movement, that is gaining. Why the pro-abortion argument is failing. He says this, quote, "If you believe that choosing the wrong side of the issue means spending eternal life in Hades, of course you're going to be more focused on it, period," end quote. What's he saying? He's saying what we say all the time. Worldview matters. If you believe that God will hold you accountable and might send you to hell for killing babies, then you bet you're going to be motivated to do something about the issue. That's just absolutely interesting. Jennifer Senior says, look, the dynamic's imbalanced, and it's now imbalanced generationally. That's really, really clear. How generationally imbalanced is it? Well, there are several people who are describing the current generation of teenagers and young adults as the most, well, she says this, the most pro-life to come along since the generation born during the Great Depression. It's going back almost a century. And by the way, the trend line is there. You want to know why? Well, as several people point out in this article, this is the generation that grew up with ultrasound images taped to the refrigerator door. You can't tell them it's not a baby. They know it is. One of the things made clear in this essay by Jennifer Senior in New York Magazine is that the status of that unborn child as a child is becoming so transparently clear, thanks to the technology, that it is no longer out of sight, out of mind. It's very much right now front and center. And that's why in an area of the article, a section that I was just unable actually even to deal with for sake of time and space, she deals with why counseling being done in abortion clinics is now becoming far more difficult. And it's because it is far more difficult for abortion providers to avoid the kinds of questions that women ask when they go in. By the way, another little factoid that may surprise you, there are many authorities who believe there are now more crisis pregnancy centers than abortion clinics in the United States. Some people say it's not even close. Fascinating. The generational shift, by the way, has led someone like Nancy Keenan of NARAL to say that the biggest defenders of abortion right now are what she calls a, quote, menopausal militia, end quote. In other words, not the young women. Another insight that I had not thought about before, that in all the stuff that I've tried to deal with abortion, I've never seen anyone make this observation. Jennifer Senior says one of the issues that leads to this generational shift on abortion is the fact that this generation of young people does think of a technological breakthrough when it comes to babies. It's IVF. It's all the fertility treatments. The technologies that they celebrate are the ones that allow you to have a baby rather than not to have a baby. And that's really interesting as well. Jennifer Senior deals with the troubled moral conscience of the pro-choice movement and abortion providers. She deals with them with remarkable candor. She reports that abortion counselors, quote, will also tell you that the stigma attached to the procedure is worse than it's been in years, end quote. She cites Charlotte Taft, operator of a Dallas abortion clinic, who acknowledged to a reporter that women know, quote, abortion is a kind of killing, end quote. Jennifer Ludlow is cited for her uncomfortable experience in seeing repeat abortion patients. So in other words, you don't have abortion providers who are saying, you know, there are really troubling parts to this. The horror and reality of late-term abortions is documented, even as the continued right, put that in quotation marks, right to such procedures is advocated. Well, hats off to Jennifer Senior for writing one of the most amazing and honest and candid and revealing articles on abortion to appear in a very long time. You know, folks, it's front and center now for our discussion. I want you to call me. What does this mean to you? Do you sense this kind of shift towards a pro-life position? What does it tell you that America has such a troubled conscience here? How do we help to bring clarity to this confusion? The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We'll be right back to do just that. Intelligent Christian Conversation.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. Let's go to Orlando, Florida. Marion's listening to WTLN. What are you thinking about this, Marion?
Well, hi, this is actually my first time listening to your program, and I'm really enjoying it, and I'm really happy that you brought up this topic and that you came across this article. And in listening to some of the points that you mentioned are mentioned in the article by the author with regard to the shift, I guess, from pro-choice to pro-life, I wonder if part of the reason for that or another contributing factor is the fact that the children that would have been raised in homes that are pro-choice were aborted.
You know, Marion, that's a very interesting insight. By the way, thanks for listening to the program today. Welcome to our audience. Glad to have you. And you listen to a great station there, WTLN in Orlando. You know, that has been noted before. And by the way, the fellow's name is James Taranto, I believe, at the Wall Street Journal, who wrote an article years ago called The Roe Effect. And he makes a very similar argument. He says, look, what happens is that pro-choice people, by the way, don't have that many babies. I mean, even before you factor in abortion, they have fewer babies than pro-life folks. So he says you factor abortion into that, and so you're looking at a significant deficit of the number of babies being had by not only pro-choice persons, but liberals in general versus conservatives. There are several people who've looked at this and said, look, liberals are non-breeding themselves into a demographic deficit, a very weak position here. You know, Marion, I think the sheer numbers in terms of abortion probably do not quite explain this, but I think the pattern you're pointing to certainly does. And, you know, I think there's probably even more to it than that. Marion, I think you're probably pointing us to something that's even deeper than just, for instance, the fact that there are about 1.4 million persons in every year missing simply because of abortion. You're also looking at a distaste, you know, to use Leon Cass's category. It's not the most important category, but it is meaningful here, the yuck factor. This is a generation that thinks about abortion and just goes, yuck. You know, they don't want to deal with it. You don't have young women, by and large, certainly not younger women, teenagers and women in their 20s, you don't see them go around wearing the T-shirts, I had an abortion and I'm proud of it. This is where Nancy Keenan of NARAL's right. That's in her menopausal militia, she talks about, of older feminists who are saying, I had an abortion and I'm proud of it. This is a generation that says that, you know, even if they are somewhat pro-choice, they are not ready to wear the T-shirts. And there's just so much going on here in terms of worldview. And as a Christian theologian, you know, looking at this, I have to say, far beyond what Jennifer Senior is looking at here, I see a Romans 1 situation. I see here the conscience of a nation being torn apart over this issue, because even as I think most Americans would like to have just a see no evil, hear no evil, hands off libertarian position on abortion, it is the moral status of that unborn child that will not allow the American mind to do that. It will not allow the American conscience to be settled on that. And that's why the passage of time has not moved in a pro-choice direction. It has profoundly moved in the different direction, the opposite direction. If not explicitly in a pro-life position, then in a position, to use the phrase of Jennifer Senior, who wrote this article in New York Magazine, it's a profound ambivalence. And that's where Harrison Hickman's statement comes in. You know, could you have ambivalence on the one side and a very clear determination to save babies on the other side? That's a disproportionate kind of motivation. And looking long term, if you don't know anything else about social movements, you know that the greater energy produces the greater momentum. And that's where this is going. Marion, I appreciate your call. I want to invite you to join the conversation. Call me at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. You know, I've had someone respond to my article today by saying, you know, an unsettled conscience is not a good thing. Well, you know, that's a profound misunderstanding. And I want to challenge that as a Christian on gospel grounds. You know, if indeed your conscience ought to be troubled, then you need to pray that it would be troubled. We need to pray that for ourselves. We need to pray that for our friends and neighbors and loved ones. if they have not found the forgiveness that they so desperately need by confessing their sins and casting their hope entirely upon Christ, if they have not taken their sins before a holy and just God and confessed them and turned to the grace and mercy of God in Christ as their only rescue, then we need to pray that they will have a profoundly troubled conscience. We need to pray that lost people will come to terms with their lostness and their desperation. And we need to pray that on the issue of abortion, Americans who are right now ambivalent would be cast into a confusion that would lead them eventually to understand that is human life, and then so much more. We'll be right back with the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. I appreciate it so much, the call from Marion mentioning the effect of disproportionate children born to pro-lifers and a deficit among the pro-choice, not only because they, as in the case of many liberals, have fewer children on average, but also because of the abortion of an entire generation, looking at 1.4 million persons. You're talking about significant demographic. James Taranto wrote the article in the Wall Street Journal that I mentioned, and I've tweeted it, put it up. You'll find it at Twitter, the link. We'll also put that link up, by the way, at the site for today's program at albertmueller.com. We're talking here about a significant shift in worldview. And time again, it has been brought to our attention that the miracle of the ultrasound has a profound effect. And here is something that I just want to draw to our attention. You'll remember how David in the Psalm speaks of God knitting him together in his mother's womb and making very clear that the Creator knew him before his own parents saw him. And that's a testimony to the sovereignty of God and to God as the author of life. You know, we have come to see so many things that previous generations never had the opportunity to see. It just in terms of the life of the generation now living, it's only in a relatively short span of years that we've been able to have microscopic cameras put inside the womb. Lars Nielsen and others, the famous Swedish photographer, I believe it is, who took some of those very early pictures using microscopy and photography to be able to watch, and, you know, even to see the sperm and the egg coming together, to see the earliest stages of cell division, and then to follow the baby in all the stages of development. The Gift of Life, a book that was published several years ago. I wrote an article about it, and that's another link we'll put up at the site, by the way. For those of you who have never seen that, you need to see those images, and you need to understand, looking at those images, why by common grace, all of a sudden there is now an incredible richness to understanding what's going on in terms of the development of the child. Because the reason for the shift on the issue of abortion, much of it can be traced to the fact that we now see with our own eyes. Now, we shouldn't have had to see it with our own eyes. This is not an excuse for previous generations. But it is to say that we now have before our eyes in this generation evidence that is even more difficult to hide from our own conscience. And that is, this is a baby we're talking about. This is a baby who frowns and smiles, who yawns and sucks his thumb. At later stages of development, where the baby can still be legally aborted, you're talking about a child that down the hall at the same stage of development could be the subject of heroic efforts to save the life due to premature birth. We're talking about a medical situation that has changed. By the way, one little footnote on that. That's why the trimester scheme of the Roe v. Wade decision from 1973 was always, always ridiculous and is now completely medically unsustainable. You're talking about viability according to Roe v. Wade only in that third trimester. That's no longer even the case. As if, by the way, that should be the measurement in the first place. But you got to deal with the decision as it is. You have to deal with the law as it is, and then confront that law with the truth. Actually, you don't confront the law with the truth. You confront people with the truth, the kind of people who make the laws, the kind of people who elect the people who make the laws, the kind of people whose mind is either ambivalent or changing on abortion. Jennifer Senior's article in New York Magazine is one of those that it is a game changer. And on the issue of the sanctity of human life, we need a game change. We need things to develop that enable us to press the case. I think this is the kind of article that is a powerful catalyst for conversation. I think it's the kind of article you can use on your college campus in the dorm. You can use it in conversation in your local church. You can use it with your own children. Warning, you might want to watch some of the photographs in the magazine. You can use this article with friends and neighbors and coworkers and say, okay, how do you deal with this? You know, what do you think about this? Why is America actually more squeamish at the least and more openly opposed at the other hand on the issue of abortion? You know, it's a big shift. And the profound thing in terms of the cultural analysis is this. This is New York Magazine. This is not U.S. News and World Report. This is not USA Today. This is not Heartland America. This is a magazine that has as its base of circulation and influence Manhattan. These are the kind of folks who also read the New Yorker and the New York Review of Books. They're devotees of the New York Times. They live in a very liberal cocoon. That's what makes this article both necessary and fascinating. Jennifer Senior here is writing to people who are shocked that the Stupak Amendment passed in the United States House of Representatives. They thought, well, look, we've got an ardently pro-choice president. We've got an ardently pro-choice majority in the House of Representatives. We have an ardently pro-abortion Speaker of the House. And then along comes a Democratic majority to pass the most restrictive, that's the way they're describing it, the most restrictive piece of legislation on abortion since Roe v. Wade in 1973. There are lots of folks in Manhattan scratching their head saying, how did that happen? It reminds me, when I've talked about this before, it comes up again and again because it's just one of those parabolic moments that distills everything. Back after the election of Richard Nixon, Pauline Kael, the theater critic for the New York Times, said he can't have won by a landslide. I don't know anybody who voted for Richard Nixon. Well, that says everything about Pauline Kael. It says very little about America, because a vast landslide majority of Americans in 72 did vote for Richard Nixon. Same thing happened again in 1980, the election of Ronald Reagan. There are a lot of folks who in Manhattan, in Berkeley, California, in places where, you know, you're living in a very liberal cocoon, they're absolutely shocked. Now, folks, it's easy for us to look as conservatives, if you are a conservative. Let me just speak to you for a moment and say it's very, very easy for conservatives to look at this magazine, to look at this article, to look at the shock on the Manhattanites and say, well, that's what happens when you live in your little liberal cocoon. That's what happens. You live in your liberal cocoon. You just live with your liberal friends. You go to your salons. You read your liberal magazines. You go to liberal schools. You have dinner with your liberal judges. So now you're shocked. Well, let's remember that we as conservatives can cocoon just as ardently with the same insularity. And that's why intelligent Christian thought and intelligent Christian conversation and a Christian mentality that is driven not only by worldview analysis, but by a concern for the gospel means you got to get out of your cocoon. You know, I like it the way one researcher put it. He said, you got to read the other side's mail. And what he means by that is you got to read their periodicals, their newspapers, read what they're reading, look at the websites that are representative of their opinions, get out in order to make sure you know how to frame the arguments, understand the worldview, and talk to persons intelligently. That's a part of our Christian mission as well. Back with final thoughts in just a moment. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. So much has been mentioned on this program, but I want to tell you the link is also up at the website for the book In the Womb. That's the National Geographic Society's fascinating book that shows these gestational pictures of the developing baby. And the whole point is here is that once you see it, you cannot deny that it is a baby, a child, a person. It is a wonder to behold, and it's beautifully depicted in the book. Released by the National Geographic Society, the author of the book is Peter Talek, a geneticist and science writer. He, along with modeler David Barlow and ultrasound expert Professor Stuart Campbell, have brought together this incredible collection of four-dimensional images. And it's a powerful testimony. It's common grace. And by the way, there's a video product also available. You can find that link to at my website at albertmiller.com, both the book and the television documentary. I think it's a wonderful thing to watch with your family, with your friends. You have someone who just has a question about abortion, just say, well, just look at this. This isn't about abortion. It's about the development of the baby. But you tell me what you think about abortion after you see this. You know, we need to be thankful for a troubled conscience. We need to be thankful that that a troubled conscience is a sign that, God may not be finished with us on the issue of abortion. There's still hope so long as this conscience is troubled, because a troubled conscience is a sign of a conscience that desperately knows it cannot settle where it is now. And on abortion, we desperately must pray that this society will not settle where it is now, will not settle for abortion as the law of the land, and will not settle for a woman wanting an abortion. You know, the bigger issue here is that it's not just about law, it's about the human heart. It always is. And when it gets to the human heart, it gets to the fact that it's not only women who would seek an abortion, it's every single one of us who has in our own hearts sin that desperately cries out our need for atonement. And that can only be accomplished by Christ. And that's why every conversation like this ends up being a gospel conversation if we rightly understand it. One of the tasks of intelligent Christian conversation is to recognize when the gospel's at stake and how to make the gospel clear, even with the context of an issue like abortion. We'll be tracking this issue with you. It ought to start a conversation. I hope that you can make use of this in your own context, in your own home, in your own workplace, on your own campus, perhaps even in your own local church. There's plenty for us to talk about. We'll be back tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation for Ask Anything Wednesday. Once again, you'll set the agenda. We'll talk about what's on your mind. You can get ahead by emailing us at mail@albertmiller.com, writing us at social media. For all the material following up on programs like this, you can go to the website at albertmiller.com. Look especially for the page for today's program. But to receive regular updates throughout the day, sign up at twitter.com/. Just sign up to follow Albert Mohler, all one word. We'll meet you tomorrow. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.